I've entitled this chapter, Sermons, The Robe, Part 1, Part 2, and tonight, Part 3, and next week, Part 4. And the reason is because it revolves around the little tassel on the tallit, or the robe, of King Saul. And David had cut that, and we'll hear him reiterate that here in just a few moments. Last week, I preached from verse 4 through verse 7. And in those verses, we looked and we saw that that David is watching. And Saul doesn't know it. But while he is possibly napping after he's heeded the call of nature, David's men are saying, "Kill him. There's your enemy, kill him." And David refuses that. And so finally David gets them subdued, calmed down. Saul wakes up, goes outside, and that's where we pick up our narrative tonight. The first thing that I want you to look at is called the revealing. There's something that is revealed to Saul that he does not know until this verse. So if you would, look with me at verse number 8. "And David arose afterward and went out of the cave." What's the afterward? Well, the latter part of verse 7 says that Saul had rose up out of the cave and went on his way. And so after Saul had done that, then David came out of his hiding place. And when Saul got away from David, David comes out and he cries after Saul and he says, "My lord the king." Now you got to remember, Saul is probably not, he's probably not from here to Miss Aline from me. It's probably more, he's probably from here to the other side of the trailer park. It's a place where that David is now back up in the high position. He could hide back in those caves because they've probably already searched them out over and over again. And so if Saul were to come back quickly, David could probably still hide back in those caves. But he comes out on the edge of that cave and he says, "My lord the king." And when he says that, he begins a conversation that Saul will pick up on next week. In the passage tonight, it's David that's doing the talking. And the first thing that he does is he reveals some things to Saul. Some of the things Saul knows, but one thing he does not know: how close he was to being killed. He was within an eyelash of being killed while he was by himself, he thought, in that cave. He's thinking, it's just cool. It's a nice place to get out of the heat. And as he lays there, falls off, doesn't realize that the man that he considers to be his number one enemy takes his knife, cuts off the corner of his garment, and he doesn't even know it. He's oblivious to what's going on around him. And so, when you look at verse number 8, it says that he says, "My lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David got his attention. He knows David's voice, and he answers to "My lord the king." He answers to that. Well, David stoops with his face to the ground. And I was trying to visualize this afternoon as I was rereading this. I've read it several times during the week, and I was rereading it today. And all I'm visualizing is it's almost an Oriental type thing where he would put his face down and he would bow. But then it goes on to say that his head, or he had stooped, his face was there, and then he had bowed himself. So in other words, he went even farther down. And so as I look, he's bowing to show humility. He's bowing to show respect. He thinks in his own heart, he's already said this to his men, this is God's anointed. And so in his own mind, there's a certain behavior that I'm going to adhere to, because this is the man that God has placed to be the leader of Israel. Who am I to play God? This is God's man for this time. Now, did he know that he was ultimately going to be the king? Yes. He had already been anointed by the prophet Samuel. But David was willing to bide his time until his time came, and he was not going to push up the start date by doing something rash. And so we see that he bows himself in humility, he bows himself in respect, and he reiterates basically to Saul that you're wrong about me. We pick that up in verse number 9. And David said to Saul, wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, behold, David seeketh thy hurt. In other words, you're listening to bad advice. He's listening to people probably like Doeg. You remember how we talked about what a vile, vile man he was. He's the man that literally went into the city of priests, the city of Nob, and began to not just have the priest killed, which he did in the presence of Saul, but he literally went back to those men's homes and began to kill their wives and children. That's how wicked this man was, and he is an advisor to Saul. And so David said, why are you listening to those words? You know that they're not true, but they're just pumping you. And there's going to be times in our lives when people say things about us that are not true, but they're going to blame you for something that you have not done. And that's going to happen. It's happened to God's people throughout the whole Bible. Do you not remember the story of Joseph? Joseph is probably the most perfect type of Jesus in the Old Testament. You don't find anything in the life of Joseph that you can point to and say, that's bad. Now, you can find things about Moses. He was called the meekest man that ever lived, but yet he got mad and broke the first set of 10 commandments. You can find things about Abraham. Abraham lied about his wife twice and said, she's my sister, so that he wouldn't get killed. And you can find problems with Jacob. You can find problems with just about everybody in the Old Testament, but you don't find that problem with Joseph. But what happened to him? He's 12 years old. His father is showing partiality to him. That's not Joseph's fault. That's Jacob's fault. He gives Joseph a coat of many colors. His brothers are ticked off about it. They take him and they throw him down in a hole, going to let him starve to death. And then basically they go, no, let's don't do that. Let's just sell him. They pull him back out and he's going, whoo, thought you guys were serious there for a minute. We are. The next thing you know, they sell him into slavery. They take his coat of many colors, dip it in animal's blood, and tell the old father an animal killed him in 80. We couldn't find him. This is all we found. And old Jacob's heart is crushed. Joseph, he's on his way into slavery. He gets to Egypt. He's bought by a man named Potiphar. And old Potiphar, he has slaves, but he looks and he says, there's something different about that Hebrew boy. And he finds out what a good testimony and what a good worker he is, what good character he's got. And so he says, you're not going to be in the fields, you're going to be in my house. And everything that Joseph did turned out great. But he had one problem. Evidently, he was a good-looking young man. And old Potiphar's wife, she got the eye put on him. And every time he would come into the house, she would say, "Hey, come here, big boy." And finally, she laid hold upon him, and he took off running and left his coat. The old saying goes, he kept his character, but he lost his coat. And what happened to her? She got all ticked off about it, and she told her husband, said, "That Hebrew that you brought in here, he tried to rape me." I think Potiphar knew she was lying. But what's he going to do? Call his wife a liar publicly? So what do? They arrest him. Joseph has still done nothing wrong. He ends up spending years in prison. He tells dreams to a baker and to a butler. And he gives the interpretation of those dreams. Even while he's in prison, he's doing right. And finally, he gets out and he's in a number two position in the whole land of Egypt. But all during this time, trying to do right, his brothers are against him. He's sold into slavery. He's put into prison. I mean, it's one roller coaster ride after another. And finally, his brothers come back and he reveals himself to them and he says, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." And so Joseph was a great, great type of the Christian life. Jesus said, there's going to be times when people revile us. There's going to be times when people get mad with you when you try to tell them about Jesus. This morning, we had a good preacher that was visiting with us, Brother Moore. He told me after the message, he said, "Preacher, that was a good message today." He said, "When I was a young man and I was pastoring over in Stone Mountain," he said, "there was a man in our community. He didn't know the Lord, but he was a very gracious man. And he said, one day I went by that house and God spoke to me and said, 'You stop and you talk to him about the Lord.' And he said, 'But I was busy. I had something to do. And so I disobeyed the Spirit of God.' He said, I came back by an hour later and the house was engulfed in flames. And he said, I got out and his daughter came running up to me saying, 'Oh, preacher, my daddy was in the house and he's gone.' And he said, I was crushed. And he said, I made up my mind from that day forward when God spoke to me and told me to witness to somebody, if I got the door slammed in my face, I was going to witness to him." And we've got to make up our mind that when we try to do right, there's going to be people that misunderstand. And they're going to revile us. And David, he had done nothing. He was the most loyal subject that Saul had. But yet, because when he killed Goliath, all the young girls began to sing about David killing his 10,000s and Saul only killing thousands. And the jealousy and listening to these men saying, "David's your enemy. We got to get him. We got to kill him." It just simply fed the rage. And so David reiterates that Saul is wrong about him. He said, "Don't listen to them." And then he said in verse number 10, he said, "Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how that the Lord hath delivered thee today into mine hand in the cave." And Saul's listening like, "What's he talking about?" In other words, you were in the cave just a moment ago. You were right there in my hand. God had placed you right there. And yet, with that deliverance, there were some of my men, and what does it say? They bade me. You know, in the Hebrew, that word bade, it means they almost commanded me. David is the leader of these 600 ragamuffins. And they're going, "Kill him, kill him. That's your enemy, kill him. He's sleeping, kill him." And they're almost commanding him to do that. And David would not. And he says, but mine eye spared thee. In other words, I would not let them do it because I looked at you and I saw the anointed of God. And so I said, I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. I want you to just think about that in the fact that he has this story revealed to him one more time. Has this not been the ongoing theme? David's like, what have I now done? As he dodges a javelin at least twice and maybe three times. Jonathan takes up his cause and said, David's done nothing. And he says, you're choosing him over me, your own father? His daughter's like, why are you doing this to me? Because she made like David was laying in the bed and let him down a wall one night. I mean, time after time after time, they're saying, David didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. And now David is saying, I didn't do anything. And so his innocence is revealed. One more time. One more time. The second thing that I want you to look at tonight begins in verse number 11. We must remember this. David has no thought of revenge. Now let that sink in. May I say this humbly, because I like the guy. This is not Donald Trump's mentality. David is not looking for revenge. He just wants to be safe. All right? If you look at verse number 11, you're going to see three times the word see. In other words, don't take my word for it. Let your lying eyes tell you the truth. All right? He says, moreover, my father, see, yea, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and kill thee not. Know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in my hand. Three times he says, just look and see. I could have killed you, but I didn't. And so we see there's no thought of being in the revenge business. That is what we are taught in the New Testament. The Bible tells us in the book of Romans, chapter 12, that vengeance is the Lord's. But that doesn't just stem from Romans. That goes all the way back to the time of Deuteronomy. God is the one that exacts vengeance upon people. I've heard people say, well, that's why the government doesn't need to be involved in capital punishment. Do you realize that in Romans 13, that the government is being used by God to bring judgment upon the evildoers? We don't get to do it as individuals. God expects the government to do that. They are ministers of righteousness for good. And so, God is not in the revenge business, nor should we be in a vengeful mood. Now, I know that the TV programs and the movies, they all portray somebody's got to get even with somebody. But the Bible tells us that we're supposed to pray for our enemies. The Bible tells us that we're supposed to pray for those that despitefully use us. And so he's saying, you look at your skirt. And all of a sudden Saul begins to pull this thing up and he begins to look and there's a piece that's missing. And where's it at? David's got it in his hand. And so we see the honesty of David in the latter part of verse 11. So he's holding this piece of skirt up And the latter part of verse 11, it says this, "Yet I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it." In other words, you were in my hand. I didn't do anything to hurt you, but yet you're still looking for me. And so we see that there's no thought of revenge. And then he goes on to say this, "As saith the proverb of the ancients." Now, who are the ancients? Those are the people that were in Israel hundreds and hundreds of years, maybe even as much as 1,000 years before David. And so what you've got is you've got people like Moses and people like Isaac and people like Jacob, and you would have these ancients, and they would have proverbs that are passed along orally from generation to generation to generation. You and I have those in our lives, all right? We say things that are sayings that people from maybe another country wouldn't even understand. We would say something like this: "Birds of a feather flock together. Water seeks its own level." And you could probably think of things that you got told when you were a child. It may be a Bible verse that you got told. It was so funny the other day. My youngest daughter was talking to us at the house, and she had been talking with one of her coworkers, which was an older man. And he was talking about how that when his son was doing something, and his son was like in like his 20s now, he said, "I'll just try to tell him something and try to, you know, throw some Bible verse at him." And Allison pipes up and goes, "Oh, that was my mom. Oh, I can tell you right now. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it's sin." And that guy goes, "Whoa! That's what your mom would say?" And he said, or she said, "Well, yeah." He goes, "Man, your mama's hardcore. That's KJV stuff right there." And I thought, that is pretty funny. I mean, you got people in current day Christianity, you know, and let's face it, all of them aren't KJV. And it's like, "Man, she's hardcore. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it's sin." Wow. And people don't understand when Christians say things. They don't always understand when we use certain colloquialisms. And sometimes you have to explain things because people don't understand. Well, this was something that most of the people in Israel understood. So what was the proverb? The proverb was this. It was, "Wickedness is done by wicked people." In other words, even if you've had something done to you, if you're not a wicked person, you will not respond. And basically, it's a teaching that comes out of Deuteronomy chapter 32 when it says that vengeance is the Lord's. And so David is saying to him, "Wickedness proceedeth from the wicked." In other words, it's wicked for you to go after me. You remember what the proverb says. And so if it's wicked, then don't do it if you're not wicked. And so that's what he's telling him. And so there is no thought of revenge. He's saying, "My hand was not upon thee. I didn't try to do anything to hurt you. I want to make sure that you know that one more time. You've never seen me throw a javelin at you. You've never seen me send anybody to assassinate you. But yet, you have." And so he's being honest with him, saying, "You know, I know you've been trying to kill me. Why don't you not do that anymore? Because I've not done anything." And so there is no thought of revenge. But there's a third thing that I'll close with tonight, and it's found in verse 14 and verse 15. And this is a request to rethink your decision. Well, what's the decision? The decision was to bring 3,000 people, men, trained special forces from Gibeah to En-Gedi to search through those caves, down passing the sheep coat, going up into those limestone crevices, and we're gonna rout out David and his 600 men. And so he's saying, I want you to rethink this. And why does he say that? Well, let's look at verse 14. He says, I'm a nobody. You are the king of Israel. I mean, you're the big guy, all right? I'm just a nobody. And to show you how much of a nobody I am, let me tell you what I think about myself in comparison to you. So he says, after whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? In other words, why did you leave Mount Gibeah and come to En-Gedi? Why are you pursuing this man? Why are you pursuing me? And then this is what he says about himself. He says, after whom thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? Now get the visual. How much thought do you give when you're riding down the road and there's a dead dog on the side of the road? You go, I hope somebody picks that thing up before it starts stinking. That's what you think. You know why you think that? Because that's what I think. I don't think, well, that's awful. I think I'll go out there, you know, and get him off the road and, you know, give him a Christian burial. I don't think that. I think, well, that's a dead dog. You know, sure glad I didn't run over him, get that stuff under my truck. It's not much value. Now, if a dead dog belongs to you, it's value. It's valuable. Was it too long ago, a few months back, that we had a little white dog named Turner? Didn't even belong to us. And we've never had animals in the house, but somehow this dog could get in the house. And he could stand up on his back legs and he could do his front paws at you like he was boxing you. And I can't explain it, but that dog brought joy to our house. And one morning we got a phone call and Deb called me and she said, Norma from next door called. Said she thinks Turner's been killed. He didn't even belong to us. He belonged to my son and his kids. And so she's like, you got to go take care of it. And I'm thinking, I don't want to. So I got an old towel from my shop and I went out and sure enough, old Turner was laying right there on the side of the road. Can I tell you that I cried like a baby? Now, I don't know what it is. The older I get, the more I blubber. I mean, I can be watching a TV program and, I mean, and it, you know, you got a picture of some little kid, that little kid suffering or that little kid says something sweet and I just want to, you know. You know, I mean, there's nothing rough and tough at all about me anymore. You know, I mean, I'm just a, you know, a fuzzball that just cries at a drop of a hat. And so, we love that dog. But can I tell you, when I go down the road and I see somebody else's dog, I don't sit there and go, I don't do that. And David's like, I'm just a dog. Not only am I like a dead dog, but I'm like a flea that's on that dog compared to you. And yet you've brought 3,000 people to seek me. I've only protected Israel. I've only revered you, and yet here I am a nobody, and you're coming after me this hard. Would you please rethink this? And sometimes we make decisions, and because of our pride, we will not change our minds about things. We get hard-headed. And you and I need to realize, hey, sometimes we're not always right. Now, somebody asked me one time, they said, you ever talk to yourself? I said, yeah, when I need an expert opinion. All right? But everybody is not always right. Nobody bats a thousand. All right? And so, he's saying, I'm a nobody. But he does something else. He reminds Saul that ultimately God is going to judge both of them. Look at verse 15. The Lord therefore be judge. And who's he going to judge between? He's going to judge between me and thee. In other words, both of us are going to be standing here. I'm not going to be the one judging, but neither are you. The Lord is going to be the one that does the judging. And do you know that when we stand at the judgment seat of Christ, I'm really not going to care what he says about you. I'm not going to sit back and go, ooh, boy, he really got Keith. You know, I'm not going to step back and go, man, I'm telling you right now, he got Miss Aline. Oh, no. I'm going to be looking and thinking, wonder what's going to happen when my time comes. And every one of us is going to stand at that judgment seat of Christ. Not for salvation, because you see, that's all been settled at Calvary. Because we accepted the gospel that I preached about this morning. We trusted Christ and believed in his death, his burial, and his resurrection. And that gospel saved us. That's all settled. But our service, our faithfulness to the work of God, all of that's going to be brought out at the judgment seat. And he says, the Lord is going to judge between me and you. But then he says one more thing in the latter part of verse 15. And see, there's that little word see again. It's not only in verse 11, it's also in verse 15. You see, and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand. In other words, God is going to judge you. He's going to judge me. And you see, he's going to deliver me because I've not done anything. If Saul had any discernment, he would listen to that and go, let me think about it a moment. Let me think about that. I had lunch today with Travis, Michael Malachi, and Travis's mom. And we were sitting there talking, and we were talking about different things, and something came up about years ago, how that when somebody would say something, I would have a preacher, and maybe he'd hold his ear and say, somebody say amen right there. And I mentioned to him at the table that I never really bought into that because I wanted to think it through before I said amen. Because there's some things that have been said from pulpits that I don't agree with. And so I don't just jump on the bandwagon unless I really, 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 really know the preacher. I don't just accept everything he says at face value without really listening to what's been said. Because there's sometimes when people say things and I'm going, I'm not buying that. No, I'm selling that. I'm not buying that. But then if there's something that somebody says and it rings true, and I mean, I've read it in the scripture, and it's just like, that's a good word right there. I'll be the first to go, amen, I like that. And old David says, I'm going to plead my cause to God, and he'll deliver me out of thy hand. When somebody begins to rip you, when somebody begins to say all manner of evil against you, you plead your cause to God. And may I say that the Lord, he can take care of people in ways that you never dreamed possible. He knows what buttons to push to get our attention. It doesn't matter who you are. As Brother Mays Jackson would say, God knows how to burn your barley field. He knows the thing that is most precious to you, and if he has to, he'll touch it. The old timers used to call that the stroke of God. Just like when a child was being chastened, they would stroke the child. Well, the stroke of God is when God disciplines or chastises us. And David is saying, I'm asking God, I'm pleading my cause for him to be on my side. And so tonight, Saul should have been listening. Now next week, we're going to hear his response. In the robe part four, he's going to talk about, oh, David, my son. And he's going to turn and he's going to leave. But can I tell you, he's got a memory that's about a half inch long. Next week, the robe part four, and we'll finish chapter 24. Let's stand together. Thank you for being in God's house tonight. We'll have one verse on the piano, organ.